Myler. Good ball. Livermore is onside. A chance for four, and it's taken. It's the man who's just come on, Stephen Quinn. Here goes El Mohammadi, and here's a chance for Myler. That'll do it. A fifth goal for Hull City, who are heading to their first ever FA Cup final.
David Myler and Stephen Quinn sending Hull City into the FA Cup final. This is the Why Big Football Show on Freak FM. I'm Dave O'Grady. Coming up, I'll be covering all the major talking points around the Irish international team. I'll be chatting to Mark McCadden of the Irish Daily Star and Dermot Carty of the Irish Examiner. We'll also have an interview from the League of Ireland Goalmouth Show with TD Mick Wallace, founder of Wexford Youth. So I'll be chatting to him all about League of Ireland football. If you'd like to sponsor, advertise, or get involved with the show, you can contact me directly. It's dave@talkingsport.org. We're also at talkingsport.org on Twitter and facebook.com/talkingsport.org. It's that simple. Well, to kick things off, from Cork City to Manchester United to Leicester City and on to Wrexham, this former Ireland international has dived into the world of management these days. He's managed Wrexham and has been the assistant manager at both Wolves and Doncaster and has been involved with Blackburn Rovers youth set up. Brian Carey, thanks a million for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
A remarkable career, Brian, that's really just getting started now on the management front. Let's go back to your playing career. You're one of those few special players to make the big move across the water, all the way from Cork to Manchester United. It must have been hugely exciting for you at the time.
Yeah, it was a fantastic time. It was fantastic. I look back on it at the time and when I was a kid back then, you know, I just went with it, you know, just kind of went with the flow, but it was a fantastic time in my career, you know, to get to Alex Ferguson rang me up at home and, you know, I was studying at the time. I was doing a diploma in construction economics at the time, but he rang me up at home and soon afterwards, you know, I was on my way to Manchester, and it was a fantastic education. Not only, I think I was just turned 20 at the time, and it was just a great education. You know, not just about football as well, but a time in my life I've probably grown up as well.
Yeah, that's what a lot of young players that have been through the Man United system, and you yourself, you were there for 3 or 4 years, and as you said, a great way to learn your trade off Sir Alex Ferguson.
Exactly, yeah, and I know, as I said, you know, I learned an awful lot about football. You know, it was a baptism of fire. It was a great apprenticeship for me, if you like. You know, probably one of the reasons that it wasn't lost on me maybe at that stage was because maybe I was 20. I'd been to college for the 3 or 4 years beforehand. You know, where some of the kids that go through these days, they're sometimes a little bit young. It doesn't work out for them. They're 17 or 18. They drift away. You know, I was 23, whatever, 24 by the time I was leaving Man United. And I just thought I had a great football education, but I had a good education in terms of life and how to live your life and how to be and how to behave and how to discipline yourself into being you know, a half-decent person and, you know, a half-decent footballer, if you like, you know.
Yeah, I think that's one of a huge point, actually, that is important for young players in football, that they learn those kind of skills. Were there many actual Irish involved at United at the time? I think Dennis Irwin would have been there, and Roy signed, I think, in 93. Maybe you yourself had a bit of an influence on that signing, as Sir Alex seemed to have a thing for Cork men.
Well, I think there's been a big tradition with not only players from Cork over the years, but there's been a huge connection between Man United and Ireland over the years. And, you know, that's always been the case, you know, and Man United has done really well out of Ireland over the years. You know, I know the people of Ireland have put so much back into Man United, though. You know, the wave of support has gone over there week after week. But there was, Dennis was there, I crossed paths with Dennis there for about a year or so. Dennis was, you know, lived down the road from me at home in Cork. Right from the other side of the city, kind of arrived as I'd left. You know, but as I say, United have done very well out of Cork over the years. But, you know, going back to your original point, what you were saying there about Alex Ferguson, what he was like with players and people, one of the things that he'd stamp on people and players that get into his team people that are touched by him or players. You know, you often hear talk about in interviews about players' characters and personalities. And that is the biggest thing for, I mean, I even say that to our kids here at Blackburn these days is, you know, what kind of person are you? Are you reliable? Are you self-motivated? And you know, Can you display some leadership qualities? They're fantastic things for players to have.
Sure is, and I think you hear a lot of players these days talking about, you know, the first one at training and the last to leave, and that seems to be holding a high priority these days. Now, you played for Leicester City from 93 to 96, and it was a really special time, Brian, for the club, because you played a role in helping them achieve top flight football. It's nice to put your name down, I suppose, on the Foxes history books there.
Yeah, it was really, look, I'd done the apprenticeship at United, and it was a case of, look, did I want to hang around? Brucey and Pally were ever present at United. And, you know, again, the phone went, the famous phone rings every now and again, your life kind of changes in this game. And Brian Little took me down to Leicester City, and it was my first real test. You know, I'd played first team for Cork City. I'd fringed the Man United thing. I was in and out in terms of being in squad, but never really made the grade at United. So this was a chance to go and play regular, and over the course of the 3 years there, it was real. You know, it was just real football, and we had a great 3 seasons there. And you know, the good thing about that, I got to work with Brian Little, and eventually Martin O'Neill came on board, and I had about 8 or 9 months working under Martin as well, which was fantastic. But we did the club at that time had the first year we got to Wembley, playing against our local rival, Derby County, and we won the playoff final and got into the Premiership. And I think the following year was a step up. I played about 15 games in the Premiership that year,
yeah,
which was fantastic. And you know, on into the next season, Martin O'Neill arrived, and he got the club back up into the Premiership as it had got relegated. And Martin was fantastic to work under. You know, it was really, really good. And really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I was looking back actually at that final, the League Cup, or the playoff final, I should say. You were one of only two non-English players actually in the Leicester City squad back then. It says a lot about the way English football was back then, but still, for yourself to hold that mantle, it must have been a very special time for all your friends and family back home as well, who were probably over at that playoff final, I'd say.
Yeah, a lot of them turned up, you know, 80,000 people at Wembley. And, you know, kind of, I suppose it was a bit of a big test in one way, like in terms of players, you know, your temperament. Would you be able, I'd never really played in front of 80,000 people before, but, you know, once the game got going and the butterflies went, whatever, you just went on adrenaline and it didn't kind of ignore the crowd, if you like. I had family there, I had friends there, and it was a fantastic occasion, you know, played at Wembley and it was good. It was a good time. And the club have gone up and down since. And I was pleased to see them get back up last week again when they got promoted back into the Premiership again.
Yeah, they're a club with a huge character, and no doubt next season it's going to be really exciting seeing them back in top flight. Around that time as well, Brian, you had got to play a few games for Ireland, but I suppose as a defender, it was always going to be quite difficult to break into the squad. You know, you had the likes of McGrath and all in there, a quality Irish team at the time.
Yeah, it certainly was, and you know, that would have been my dream and ambition, and one probably regret I'd have in my career is, look, I didn't play more for Ireland than, you know, than you know, would have loved to have done. I got 3 caps as it was, you know, but I'd love to have gone on and been a regular, I feel like, or been around the whole thing a lot more. Having said that, look, I was in plenty of squads, and I started off as an overage player in one of the under 21 games, and Jack was at the game, and he invited me along, because he invited me to stay over, actually, because the senior team was meeting up, and I stayed over with them. And I was involved with squad after squad in the build-up to World Cup 94, USA 94. And it was great. It was a fantastic time. And again, being surrounded by some of the, like you said, there were some fantastic players in that squad at the time. And, you know, it was a pleasure to be play some small little part, you know, even if it was a tiny little part of being in the squads, you know, it was really, really good. And as I said, it was a great learning curve for myself.
Yeah, certainly the Irish team, even though they didn't qualify for the 92 Euros, but it was probably at one of its strongest points. And, you know, as you said, that 94 in the preparations, being around the squad in preparations for the 94 World Cup, there was a huge buzz around Irish football back then. I mean, of course, Jack had brought Ireland to the 88 European Championships, the Italian 90, and this was to be the next big adventure. So it was a special time even to play some part in it, Brian.
It was a fantastic time. I think one of the outstanding memories for me, if we look back at international football, was going up to Windsor Park when it was the day. It was the local derby, Northern Ireland versus the Republic, and when we turned up, probably a little bit of more of a political background to this one, but I remember Kate Abey standing at the entrance to Windsor Park. Don't know what she was expecting, but you know, quite a vociferous crowd behind us, and it was a fantastic night. I wasn't on the bench as a squad player, not as a substitute. But it was just the tension that night. It was a 1-1 draw, and I think that was the game that meant that that we qualified for USA 94. And it was a fantastic night. But as I said, there were some fantastic players around that scene. And Jack, the strength of Jack was that he moulded everybody together. He got them all, and the lads to enjoy themselves. They liked the turn up for Jack. They liked the whole environment. And I think that's one of the secrets of management is managing players, very good players, and keeping them interested.
Indeed, it was a really remarkable night indeed. You moved on actually to play for Wrexham, one of the few Welsh clubs in English football, but it's a club that you really seem to kind of fall in love with, Brian. I mean, you were captain and you stuck with them for over 10 years. Really enjoyed your time there.
Well, I was Wrexham at the time were League One, and I'd just come out of the Championship at Leicester. My contract was up at Leicester, and while I'd been at Man United, Brian Flynn, who was manager of Wrexham, he took me in on loan, and I played in that famous cup tie when Wrexham beat Arsenal. So there was a bit more to it than just being another club. It was a little bit of a special time, you know. Mickey Thomas scored that goal, and we beat Arsenal in that FA Cup tie. I'd been part of that, and it was a really fantastic time for me. And I'd really kept in touch, and the manager would ring me, and every so often, how was it going, and offer advice. Joey Jones was there, and Kevin Reeves was there, who's the chief scout at Anderton now. They were a really fantastic club and really great people. They were in League One at the time. I moved back to Manchester, and I went there for, you know, signed for a couple of seasons back then, thinking,
yeah,
you know, I'll have a couple of seasons. And the idea was that we were making a salt and getting into the Championship, playing every week. Leicester, I was in and out of the team at Leicester, so I was playing at Wrexham every week. I ended up staying, I think, for about 15, 16 years in total. As you say, I ended up playing, managing, coaching. You know what it's like at a small club. You end up driving the minibus. You end up sweeping up, picking the team. The usual sort of stuff that every kind of unpaid volunteer around the country, you know, that all these people that underpin sport all over the world, if you like. These people, you know, it was like one of them. You know, you have to do the small club. You muck in and you do everything. I ended up managing for about 11 months as well, which was a great experience. And then, you know, it just, as I say, ended up staying probably too long in the end, but it was a really great part of my life, yeah.
But, and as you said, I mean, you did certainly reap the rewards, Brian, because it did prove to be the perfect platform, as you said, to launch your management career, which only went up and up. So, I mean, there was definitely a club like Wrexham, and what you had done, captaining them and famous scalps over Arsenal and that, to go into management and to manage the club must have been a very proud moment for you.
It was. And I mean, it was probably right place, right time, more than my real ambition at that time to go on and do it. And in hindsight now, look, I could look back and say, really, I don't think I was 100% ready to do the job. At the time, circumstances didn't dictate that. When I retired from playing, I helped out Dennis Smith, who was the manager then, and Kevin Russell, assistant manager at Peterborough now. I helped them out with all sorts of duties, taking training, scouting, this, that, the other. And results were kind of going against us in League Two. And the owner at the time, Dennis was stepped aside, Dennis was sacked, whatever. And he approached me and said, look, I've been working at the Centre of Excellence for quite a few years.
Yeah.
Obviously, been playing for a while, and he said, would I be interested in taking the job? I actually had a chat with Dennis Fitter, the manager, and he said, go for it. Look, you may never get another opportunity again. And, you know, it was a really exciting end to the season. It was a huge, huge learning curve for me as a person, and a real test and a real challenge, because it was about 15,000 people at the racecourse for the last game when Wrexham played Boston that season, and we needed to draw, and we ended up staying in the league because we won 3-1 in the end. But it was really close, really tight, but I didn't really want the season to end because we won about 6 games out of 9.
Yeah.
At the end, I just felt I'd got the whole thing going, really. Then the season came to an end, and by October, November, results hadn't been great, and the owner, who's still a close friend, made a difficult decision. I came and had a chat with me, and anyway, they brought Brian Little in and kept me on a scouting capacity at the time. I continued to work there, but Things didn't work out for Brian Little, who came in there, and Dean Saunders ended up taking over as manager, and he asked me to come and help him out, which I did.
And it was you developed actually a terrific relationship with Dean Saunders. Of course, you followed him to Doncaster Rovers and Wolves. He obviously thought very highly of what you had done.
Well, the thing was, Dean was around the kind of centre of excellence at the time because he was involved with the assistant manager of Wales at the time with John Toshack. A fantastic character, really, really bubbly character, but he was friends with the owner as well. So I actually got Dean, when I was manager, you know, I wouldn't be the kind of guy that would keep people, if there's somebody there who was good and could help me, I'd add them in. And I just said to Dean, listen, would you do a bit with the centre-forwards, the strikers? And he'd come in a couple of days a week over the period of about 6 weeks, and he'd you know, liven the place up with his personality and his character, his stories and his tales. But he was very, very knowledgeable about the game, and it was a fantastic for all the staff that was there at the time to be tapping into what he was doing. And so Dean, I suppose, remembered that, and when he got the job himself, he then asked me to help him out. So I kind of knew him before he got the job at Wrexham, and then we moved on. As I said, we got to Wrexham top of the conference that time, we got the job at Doncaster, and then on to Wolves.
Incredible stuff. And for Dean, I know things didn't really work out at Wolves, but you can see him probably getting back into club football management soon, do you think?
Who knows? You know, I see him popping up in the sky now all the time. I speak to him on and off. He's enjoying himself playing golf at home, you know, and you know, he's got a lot of unfinished business there, because he probably wasn't too overly enamoured with what happened at Wolves. You know, we were given the job there in January, and by May, you know, the club were on a downward spiral at the time. But we said to them, look, it would only be a matter of time before we're back in the Championship again because of the squad you had, the budget you had. And so it's happened. So yeah. It's unfolded. So I know it's easy for me to say now, 12 months down the line. But they needed that. They needed that time out to address the imbalances they had in their squad. But it's a good club. You know, they run it well. And as I said, they've got a fantastic fan base there. And it is a shame that things didn't work out. But look, that's football. That's the way it goes. I didn't complain when we uprooted from Doncaster and went to Wolves, you know, and same from Wrexham to Doncaster. So, you know, I wasn't complaining when Wolves made the decision to terminate the contracts of myself and Dean. So, you know, that's football for you. And when you're in it, it's a tough business, and you've got to take it rough with the smooth.
It's going to be interesting seeing Wolves in the Championship again next season. Of course, a club that, as you said, they have the good structures in place there now, and they have the squad. And one of the things I have noticed about the players at Wolves, Brian, is they seem to have a good crop of loyal players that have stuck with them through thick and thin.
Yeah, Wolves actually is another club that's had a lot of there's a lot of Irish players over the years who've gone through the books there, but they have, and I think what's happened. Look, they've got into the Premiership and they cut their cloth accordingly in the Premiership, and didn't quite suit when they're in the Championship, and they've had to redress again and go again. You know, they've got worked themselves out of League One now, and they'll rebuild, and it'll probably take them a while to settle down again in the Championship and get going, and you know, as I say, with a fan base like they have. And the structure that they have, you know, they are one of the bigger clubs that really should be in the Premiership.
Yeah, hopefully we'll see them there in a few years to come. Now, you're currently involved, Brian, with Blackburn Rovers, with the youth team and that. Do you find a good crop of young players coming through there? Is it quite a difficult job, as it seems to be the way across clubs these days that the youth structures are the way to go, and the more players that you can develop that will go on to play at a top level, there is a pressure on a lot of youth coaches.
I think it's certainly the way forward. I think England, really, the English football really has suffered by, particularly the Championship and maybe down into League One or Two, by ignoring, I think, possibly even the Premiership. If you look at Southampton this year, you know, they've kind of trusted what they've done and brought players through, local homegrown talent, they've brought them through and trusted them and stuck with them. And I think over the years, you know, I think over the last 15 years maybe so, I think clubs have, I wouldn't say lost the run of themselves, but they've always gone for the foreign name and not trusted their own and not backed their own. Certainly I think Blackburn is a little bit similar to Wolves in terms of it's been in the Premiership not so long ago. There has been a big turnover of players. And I think the way forward is to put trust in the young ones that are coming through. I came here in August, and it's been a fantastic experience. It really has. It's been it's different. It's like I'm involved in football, have a job in football, but without the cutthroat decisions at 5 o'clock or 4 to 5,
100%.
And it does allow you to get on and focus on some long-term objectives. You know, the system in play at the moment with the kids is that, you know, there's different categories of clubs and academies of different categories, and Blackburn's academy is Academy 1. So with the games program has been quite difficult. Man United's, Man City's, Chelsea's, Tottenham's, all of those we've been playing against them on a regular basis. And sometimes I've found it tough. But up above as well, the 21s have taken a lot of the under-18s, which is a good sign. So the results haven't been fantastic, but the performances have been good, and the lads have listened, good attitudes, and a real willingness to learn, because they recognise what's there from the end of it.
One of the things that I know some people in England, there's a little bit of a concern about in regards to the academies, say, at some of the top clubs. Now, I remember watching the Next Gen Championship with Aston Villa. They were taking on Chelsea in the final. And I remember the commentators were saying about the Chelsea team, there was only, I think, one local-born London lad actually in this under-21 side that was playing in the final. Is that a little bit of concern? Is there a pressure across, say, youth football in England maybe to try and bring the more local lads through? Because I know a lot of the big clubs do tend to be investing a bit of money in catching up and coming French players or Belgians or a lot of good African players.
I think the likes of Chelsea have certainly done that. There are clubs that do collect players, if you like, and they get the best players from wherever they can and get them into the system. I find it a little bit difficult, really, because sometimes they don't play. I think the top clubs, particularly like the Chelsea, that they have to make sure that the players are going to break into their team, not only good enough for the Premiership, but they have to be good enough for the Champions League. It's a big ask. It's a really, really big ask. Some of them have been really clever, and they've, you know, they've used the loan system and they've found the players back out on loan again. And I think, David, I think it's difficult. I think every club's different, and every club's got a different way of doing it. Man City, they might find that at the moment they've got a big crop of players as well. Whereas over the years, look, Man United have brought the local ones in, and they've stuck to the local talent, and they've trusted their system. They had a manager which they had their own philosophy there, how they went about things, and they had a manager which bought into the youth system, and he had people in place that produced the right characters and the right personalities. And that worked for them for years. So I don't see why that needs to change. And I don't, you know, spending millions really on bringing players in from abroad. You know, if you get good players and it works for you, then so be it. But I don't know, I think it's quite difficult for lads to are they going to get in? Are they going to be regulars? Are they going to get a chance? No, I don't think they will.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's a major concern among particularly up-and-coming, say, local footballers there. The academies might not bring about the professional career that they desire in that regards. Before I let you go, Brian, plans for the future? Are you just hoping at the moment to keep on working it with Blackburn Rovers? Would you ever consider getting back into a full senior management role?
I'm not too sure. I mean, I did it for a while and I enjoyed working with Dean as being his assistant. You know, I had plenty to do. I was really busy and I actually enjoyed the role without put myself under that much pressure. And I felt, to be honest with you, for the first time in probably about 25 years, I'm doing this job, but I've probably got my life back a little bit.
Brilliant.
You know, so I've quite enjoyed that since I started in August, and I've been able to have a little bit of a life, I think, as well as having a job in football, whereas, you know, when it is your life, when it is your job, when it is your, you know, that it can take up too much. And, you know, I've seen quite a lot of the family, and I've been able to do things that I haven't done before, other interests as well, you know, and I've enjoyed it. So I'll never say never, but you know, I'll see what the future holds. I don't in this job, I think it's to make definitive plans. I think it's the best. You know, it's probably a little bit unwise. I'll see what happens in the near future.
Yeah, it's got to be, hopefully, fingers crossed, it'll be all terrific. It's great to see you enjoying it and not having the pressure on you for once. Just finally, before I let you go, we've had great things happening in football in Cork recently with the development of the education programme with Cork City and that, and some great players coming through. We see David Myler, he'll hopefully get a chance now to play in an FA Cup final. Do you think we'll see the Rebel County develop more international footballers?
I can't see why not. I mean, I know they've had a fantastic under-19 programme there for the last few years, and Paul Beldren And the likes of they've done fantastic recently. John Coffey is a good man as well. They've got a good infrastructure there. They'll probably need help along the way as well if they can. You know, they won't be blessed. So the club will be run sensibly, which I think is important.
Yeah.
And hopefully the lads get an opportunity and the lads get a chance. Then I don't see any reason why not. You know, it's happened before. It's been a very, very good breeding ground for lads that have gone into the Premiership and gone abroad and become seasoned internationals. So, you know, hopefully that continues again. They've had a great start to the season. And John's really captured the imagination of the Cork public. And, you know, they've been good attendances and they've made it difficult. It's been a difficult place for the opposition to go so far this season. So, fingers crossed. It's a good hunting ground for people, and I know it's rich with talent. I think just finding it is the difficult part.
Yeah, well, Brian, we wish Cork the very best of luck, and no doubt we'll see more players like yourself and maybe future managers as well. Thanks a million for joining us on the Why Big Football Show. I wish you the very best of luck at Blackburn Rovers this season, and hopefully we'll see a couple of more superstars being developed coming through on your watch. Thanks a million, Brian.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Why Big Football Show on Freak FM. Get involved with the show. Email dave@talkingsport.org. That's dave@talkingsport.org. We're also on Twitter and on Facebook. Chat to you soon. It's time now for your international football roundup here on the Why Big Football Show. I'm delighted to be joined by Ger McCarthy of the Irish Examiner and Mark McCadden of the Irish Daily Star. Lads, thanks a million for joining us. Mark, to come to yourself first, and we have to look back at the Hull City, the Irish involved, huge Irish involvement in Hull City's win there in the FA Cup semi-final. They're going to take on Arsenal now, but it was great for the likes of Stephen Quinn to come on as an impact sub from the bench, and David Myler, who's been having a remarkable season for them this year, getting a goal, and now will taste a final date at Wembley again.
Yeah, look, we've had some success in FA Cup in recent years, and Irish goal scorers at Wembley too. So it's nice to see that we'll be well represented again in the final. James McCarthy, obviously at Wigan last year, was a complete underdog, but obviously they won against Manchester City. So we'll be hopeful of the same thing happening again. Obviously, Chair's boss won't be saying the same thing, but fingers crossed the same thing happens again now and we see a couple more FA Cup winners medals coming into Irish hands. It would be great as well if we saw Robbie Brady getting back to full fitness as well for the final, just to add to the Irish contingent out on the pitch. But delighted for Stephen Quinn. Great stage for him to get a goal in, and David Myler obviously is progressing really well at Hull, and this is just another huge stepping stone for him.
Indeed, Ger McCarthy, to come to yourself, your former Cork compatriot David Myler, he's had a really good season and nothing seems to faze him, and you could see that through his celebration with the goals. He was just doing his job.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's made an art form of it, really. Late runs into the box. And one thing he said himself in previous interviews is that he needs to score more goals from that position. So it was good to see him getting into that position. Good to see him finishing off the move. And I'm certain Mr. Mark O'Neill and Roy Keane will have taken note of that as well. I'm delighted for Dave because he's been blighted by injuries over the past couple of seasons, but he's finally had a decent run without any major problems. And look what's happened. He's nailed down the first place under Steve Bruce. He's in an FA Cup final, and an opportunity to re-establish himself in the international setup now as well. It's good for Irish football. I'd echo what Mark said there. It's very good to see so many Irish players involved in an FA Cup final. Shane Long as well, if he's fit when it comes into the final, certainly going to give that Arsenal back for plenty of problems. But from an Irish point of view, and obviously from a Park point of view, the better and Dave Myler plays, and the more matches he gets under his belt, and the better player he's going to become. And I'm even more happy for him that his season was in danger of being overshadowed by that Alan Pardew incident. And he's written his own headlines now, and it's great, and hopefully he'll get a starting berth in the cup final.
Yeah, it's great to have an Irish player who's pretty tall for a midfielder but yet has the ball skills at his feet. Mark, Kevin Doyle is returning from injury at just the right time for QPR, a chance now to maybe boost them into the Premier League. But we spoke a bit about strikers on the programme last week, But it's good for Kevin. It's been a little bit of a disappointing season for him. He'll be hoping to get another season in top flight maybe next year.
Yeah, oh look, it's been a horrendous, not just season for him, but last couple of years, both club and international. He's had a horrible time with injuries. Obviously, Wolves' situation, he wasn't helped, battling as a lone striker in the Championship. It was really was a thankless task, and it looked like he'd be on his way out at last summer before the League One campaign kicked off. That wasn't the case, and thankfully, in January, he got his loan move. Fortunately, after a bright start, things went downhill pretty quickly. We picked up another what looked like a serious injury, one that could have ruled him out for a lot longer than it has done, and by the sounds of things from Harry Redknapp over the past day or so, he seems pretty eager to make Doyle a permanent signing, which again would be fantastic for him, just to get a bit of stability at a club where he's clearly wanted. He obviously didn't really have that at Wolves, especially with Kenny Jackett came in. He made it pretty clear from the start that for whatever reason, possibly financial, that he didn't want Doyle at Wolves. So again, hopefully he comes back fitter and stronger than ever and can play a big part in QPR's run for the playoff spots.
Sure, to come to yourself, I know under 19 cap and former Cork City player Alan Brown, he marked his first start for Preston with a goal last weekend. Hopefully now the future could be bright for him. Cork starting to produce some quality players. It's good to see him get on the score sheet for Preston.
Yeah, it is. It's excellent. And I mean, a lot of goodwill, especially from Leith side, but not just Leith side, but the entire League of Ireland, I'd say, because he's a player that a lot of people have a lot of big expectations of. And if he's scoring that early in his Preston tenure, it's certainly a good sign. But just mention of Cork, I mean, their success at under 19 level over the past couple of years under Paul Bowden, I think, is now starting to bear fruit. And when you see John Caulfield, where Cork City are in the League of Ireland, top of the table, I know John is anxious to bring through as many young players as possible in the coming years, and cultivate the talent and the groundwork and the foundations that have been laid by Paul Bowden and the backroom staff down in Cork City. Winning an under 19 league title isn't an easy thing to do. There's some decent teams in the elite league, but to win it 2-3 years in a row is certainly bodes well for the future for Cork City. And one player I'd like to mention, just a guy from down my direction in West Cork, is Connor Ellis, who you're going to be hearing quite a lot of. He's an international now, at under 15, under 16 level, in the Cork City elite team, scoring goals this year, linking play, a very, very good link attack player, and a goal scorer as well when he gets in the box. A name to watch out for as well, just to add that to your ever growing list of Irish players coming through. But really, really excited because I've seen him come through the West Cork Schoolboys League nurseries down here at this end of the country, and it's great to see another international being produced by in a rural area dominated by GAA. And that bodes well too for City for Cork City in the coming season.
It's great as well. Like last week on the Wide Book Football Show, we had Gareth Morgan on talking about the Irish players down in the Championship, League One and League Two, coming through in England. And it's great to hear that here in Ireland we are producing players. One lad, Mark, that we have had so much high hopes for and maybe a little bit falling from grace, which we hope he can now revive his career, is former Arsenal midfielder and current Hull City player, actually, Connor Henderson. Now, he made his first start in a competitive game since August 2012 on loan at Stevenage. He was marked out as one to watch for a long time, but he seemed to fall off the radar now. Hopefully he will be able to pick things back up, but is this another Connor Clifford type story, do you think?
You really would hope not. I mean, he obviously came. You know, any Irish player in the other underage ranks who's with Arsenal, attached to Arsenal, will obviously draw a hell of a lot of exposure because, you know, we don't have so many players at big clubs these days, even in academy level. So I thought it was great that he got a move to Hull. It seemed to start out pretty well for him. Steve Bruce seemed to be quite a fan of his, and unfortunately things haven't gone as well as they might have hoped. What this move does do, though, is it, and I suppose looking at the positives of it, is it does give him a chance to play some first team football. Hopefully he's got four games to go. Stevenage is rooted to the bottom of the table. I think there's 4 points between them and outside the relegation zone, so you know he's a chance to come in and make a hero for himself. As for fall from grace, he's 22 at this stage. you would hope that he's developed a little more than he has done in terms of where he's playing, but it's certainly by no means too late for him to come on and establish himself as someone who can play regularly in the Championship or even Premier League.
Indeed, and as I mentioned Conor Clifford earlier, he's a young lad as well, and he can certainly come up through the ranks, I know, down there at Southend. Jura, to leave a final one to yourself, I know Martin O'Neill was at the Stoke Newcastle game last weekend. A few Irish players on show, including Stephen Ireland. I know a lot of fans are asking the question now that they see Martin O'Neill going to Stoke. Are we finally going to see Cork's prodigal son back in the Irish jersey? I know it's the most asked question for the past 10 years, we'll say.
No, I love the way he's known as the Cork's prodigal son, not the Irish prodigal son. I get asked it quite a lot. My only concern with Martin O'Neill being at that match was that he wasn't fussing out Alan Pardew's job, which may or may not come up in the next couple of months. But just on Stephen Ireland, I've seen him two or three full Stoke matches over the past month and a half. And when he's featured, he has done well, not exceptionally well, not to the point where you'd be saying, God, we really need to get to sit down with this guy and get him back into the squad. What he needs, and what Roy Keane and Martin O'Neill said at the start of the season, he needs a consistent run of games, but he needs to perform at a consistent level within those games. And Stoke are enjoying a terrific end to the season under Mark Hughes. They're playing the kind of football that suits Stephen Ireland. But for me, even though he is getting a lot of game time, though, he still is yet to rediscover that form that he had when he was at Man City, that kind of, in the final third, picking a pass, unlocking a defence. He needs to rediscover that now. To do that, perhaps he may even have to move away from Stoke again. I don't know what's going to happen during the summer with Mark Hughes. He'll have a full summer now, at the Britannia to bring in even more players and build on their success. But I hope he retains his position in the Stoke team. I hope he improves and continues to improve. But as far as international call-up goes, I think we're some way off that yet.
Okay.
To the point where he hasn't done enough for me to justify the call-up.
Okay, Mark, just final to you on that. Do you think we'll see him in the end-of-season friendlies?
No, not in the end-of-season friendlies. I don't think he'll come in for that. It's so hard to know what's going on regarding Stephen Ireland because, I mean, I suppose this year more than most, because he's been involved in first-team football more than in recent years, we hear so much from him. And again, there does seem to be a lot of mixed messages. The most recent comments seem to have been the most hopeful ones to date. But again, as Ger said, it all depends on how he does at club level. He needs to really kickstart his career at club level again to make sure he's playing week in, week out at Premier League level. And then he can consider, or we can consider him in terms of an international return. And as far as he's concerned as well, I think he's looking at it that way as well. He's looking at nailing down his club future first and then, I suppose, looking to his international future.
Indeed, it'll be interesting to see. Well, Ger McCarthy and Mark McCadden, thanks a million for joining us on the show.
You're listening to the Why Big Football Show on Freak FM. Get involved with the show. Email dave@talkingsport.org. That's dave@talkingsport.org. We're also on Twitter and on Facebook. Chat to you soon.
Well, both Airtricity League and Division 1 have been full of surprises already this season. The competitive nature of the Irish domestic game has really left us wondering how far forward the leagues have gone. I'm delighted to be joined by TD, former football manager and founder of the Wexford Utes football team, Mick Wallace. Thanks a million for joining us, Mick. I first have to ask you about the Wexford Utes in Division 1 of the league this season, currently lying in third position. The aim, I guess, Mick, is always to compete for promotion, but no doubt a lot of good teams in Division 1 this year.
Well, first of all, I'd like to correct your introduction. I might be the former manager of a senior League of Ireland side, but I still manage three underage teams with the Wexford Utes, so I'm still very much involved in football. But Shane Keegan is the manager now of the senior team. Promotion, to be honest with you, I mean, I was hoping that the FAI would make the decision of creating one division for all the teams rather than continuing with the two-division format. But as having said that, the Wexford Utes, it's a bit more about than just trying to get promotion for us. You might say that our first priority is not to finish bottom.
Yeah.
And I think this is our eighth season now, and we've never finished bottom. So given that we're usually the youngest team in the league, and we've always been amateur, we've always been seen as a bit of an underdog. And I think we were favourites at the start of this season to finish bottom, which I find a bit crazy, because I'd be very confident that we won't. And but can we get promotion? It's obviously difficult. Every game is actually hard to play. It's hard to win every single match. No matter who you're playing, I find, in our division, each game is a big challenge. And every time that you get a win, it's a big bonus, no matter which team you're playing. But it is hard to win games, but it's hard for everybody. And the thing about it is, I think every team can give their opponents serious problems on the night. Which makes it very even.
We have, of course, you said, you know, the clubs with huge, great traditions in Division 1 this year. I mean, you have the likes of Shelburne, Finn Harps, Longford, Galway, Waterford, and Cove Ramblers, and of course, Shamrock Rovers B team thrown into the mix, really kind of shaking things up as well. But you guys have had a great start so far. I mean, as you were saying, at the start, maybe favourites to finish in the bottom, but nevertheless, there's little or nothing between the sides so far. Maybe Shelburne are starting to create a little bit of a foothold in the league, but having said that, winning a game or two will put you right up there at the top.
Yeah, well, we lost 2-0 away to Shelburne, but with 9 minutes to go, it was nil all, and we had a player very unfairly sent off, and it changed the game. We matched Shelburne on the night, so I don't think there's much between us and Shelburne either. The other night in Finn Harps, we were 1-0 up with 5 minutes to go, and we had an extra man. And we gave away a penalty, which we also felt was a harsh decision, but teams generally do. But having said that, Harps were good, and even with 10 men, Harps were solid, you know, and maybe a draw was probably a fair result.
How important do you think it is, Mick, for football in the southeast of Ireland that you guys are successful? I mean, it was quite disappointing what happened to great teams like Kilkenny City, and there's been other teams that have had similar financial problems. It's a real good soccer part of Ireland. It is important for you guys to make it a success at Wexford.
Yes, I mean, Wexford is one of the, I think it's the third biggest league in the country now, at junior level and underage. Underage soccer is very, very strong in Wexford. The quality of players coming through is very strong. But then, having said that, Kilkenny and Waterford are very strong as well, and we have players from those counties as well playing with us. You know, of course, having senior football available to players in the region, I think does mean a lot, and it does help the game at underage level as well, that facility is there. And this year now, the Wexford County team, Garrett Larkin is managing them. I've managed them for 21 years, but Garrett has managed them last year and this year, and he won the Interleague A-Heams last year with the Wexford League, and they're in the Ireland final again this year. So it shows you how strong underage soccer is in Wexford.
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, for the league as a whole, you know, we talk about boom time, and a lot of people say during the League of Ireland, in the boom, a lot of teams spent a lot of money on players' wages and that kind of thing. But then you see the likes of Limerick and that, with their recent developments, they put the focus more in development. Do you think there's a lot of clubs now going down that route? They're looking at, we need to build more so for the future than just try to get the best players on the pitch.
Yeah, well, sadly, that has been the trend in League of Ireland for years. I have found it disappointing that there hasn't been enough emphasis on the underage with League of Ireland clubs. But I can assure you, with the Wexford Utes, the underage is actually probably the biggest priority we have. And I think that League of Ireland clubs do need to invest more in their underage players. And I believe the FBI are starting an under-17 League of Ireland competition now, which I think is a great idea. And I think it is, whether they like it or not, it's actually going to drag League of Ireland clubs into a healthier position, having to develop players at that age group. and I think it will help the game all round.
Yeah. Do you think it's going in the right direction? I mean, it does seem quite difficult when we compete against other sports, when you see the likes of Sky Sports and all coming in for the GAA and that. How do you think we are with football at the moment, domestic football?
Well, I mean, a big problem for soccer in Ireland is that it's the biggest participant sport in the country. You have nearly 500,000 people registered to play soccer between men and girls in Ireland. 500,000, that's incredible. So the truth of the matter is that we play so many games and everyone is so active actually playing the game that there isn't enough people out there to actually come and watch us. I mean, you take... If you compare, as I would say, with the Gaelic, for example, right, you compare with the Wexford Hurlers, I mean, the Wexford Hurlers get great support for their championship games.
Yeah.
Now, they don't get much support for their league games, but for the championship, they get great support. But how many games do they play in the year? Wexford play an average of probably 3 championship games in the year. The Wexford youth senior team play over 40.
Yeah.
And I mean, so that's a huge difference, you know? And because so many people are actually playing soccer, I mean, ideally, for the Wexford youth to get a real good crowd at home, we'd want to be playing on Sunday afternoon. But we can't because everyone is playing soccer.
Indeed, there's no doubt about it. In terms of what the clubs can be doing to drive the League of Ireland, as you said, investing in youth football, and in terms of attendances, I suppose, week in, week out, we look at the likes of Cork and we've seen what they've been able to do in pulling huge numbers to Turner's Cross. Do you think we need to be marketing the League of Ireland better? Maybe more televised games would help us promote it.
Well, I mean, Cork City are in a great position, though, because they are the only side in the city, and it's a big city. So it gives them a great advantage, and if the truth were told, I mean, themselves and Shamrock Rovers and maybe Derry City are probably the only ones who can probably pay their way at the moment. But, you know, the point you made earlier about League of Ireland clubs spending most of their money bringing in players and paying them big wages, I mean... That was, for me, problematic and wasn't necessarily a good thing. And I don't think it's so important that that the game is full-time professional, from my point of view. I think, I mean, given that there's nearly 500,000 people registered to play for soccer in Ireland, I mean, you're only talking the amount of people that will actually get paid to play soccer in Ireland is a couple of hundred. Maybe maximum 300 people get money to play soccer. Maximum. It's probably not even 300. So in actual fact, for all practical purposes, soccer is an amateur sport in Ireland. And I thought, you know, the emphasis on bringing in big players, paying out money, and the attendance is not coming in the gates to matches, it just wasn't a good business plan. And I always felt with League of Ireland soccer, too often, the people who love soccer didn't always, and who got involved in running League of Ireland clubs, didn't always bring a business sense to the equation. And it was one thing, when I started at the Wexford Youths, I wasn't going to be foolish about paying out wages because I didn't think it was sustainable. And to be honest, I mean, the Wexford Youths players, are, even in terms of expenses, are probably the lowest paid in the league. It actually costs players money to play for the Wexford Youths, as we don't even pay them for all their diesel.
It's a whole new outlook when you say about soccer, it's practically an amateur sport here in Ireland. What about the mentality of a lot of young footballers as well, Mick? I mean, should we be doing more maybe to try and encourage them to stay in the league? I know a lot of you up-and-coming footballers who want to go professional, the first thing they'll think of is, how can I get a deal over to England and that? I know Seamus Coleman mentioned how staying in an extra year in the League of Ireland playing with Sligo Rovers benefited him, and James McLean said the same with Derry City.
Yeah, well, you can also look with Kevin Doyle, Shane Long. I mean, Kevin played with me for 3 years in the Wexford structure, and he went to St. Pat's, and then he went to Cork, and then he went to Reading. And, you know, I mean, he's got a great career out of it. Shane Long went to Cork City as well before he moved to Reading. And I think both of them benefited very much from playing League of Ireland for a while. First, it builds them up, it prepares them mentally. I don't like the idea of kids going over to England at 16, 17. I think they're too young for us. And the statistics bear it out. You must remember, for every 200 kids that go over to England to try and make a career out of playing football, the amount you're looking at, I think up to 199 out of 200 coming home. I mean, the success rate is low. And because I think the challenge is too great for kids. You're taking them out of their bed, you're taking them away from their mother, their father, their friends, away from their own environment, you're taking them out of school. I think it's a very big ask. And not only that, but they're going into an environment over there that's dog-eat-dog and it's hostile. You go to a club, you pick any club, like for example, take Queen's Park Rangers. If a young kid of 16 leaves Ireland and goes to Queen's Park Rangers, he's more than likely, he's going to go into a youth academy, they're going to have 20 other guys his age at under 16, probably 20 under 17 and 20 under 18, and the other kids realize that they've got to do better than him in order to survive. And the clubs, generally speaking, they're actually happy. If they have 2018s, 2017s and 2016s, if they can get one out of each of those years, they're actually very happy.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, that's very difficult.
Really is. A lot of heartbreak there for youngsters coming over and coming back as well. What about bringing established players back to the League of Ireland? Should that be a focus? I mean, we've seen the likes of Keith Fahey, Stephen McPhail, and I know players like Damien Duff, he's even expressed an interest in playing League of Ireland football. Should we be doing more, do you think, to encourage these guys back? Or is the league better served as kind of an up-and-coming league for youth players, do you think?
I would like to see a stronger concentration on young players coming through. But having said that, an awful lot of young lads in their early 20s that play in League of Ireland now have been to England and are some of the people who came home. And they're a great addition to League of Ireland because they're still young, they have a lot to offer, they've seen what it's like, and they do strengthen the League of Ireland. But I tell you what, I mean, even you take the Wexford youths, and we're probably the most amateur team in the league at the moment. I mean, Shane Keegan is the manager, right? And I can tell you, if the approach that Shane Keegan has and that he brings to the equation and that he has engaged with the players, it couldn't be more professional.
Yeah.
He runs a completely professional structure, and that's one of the reasons that we actually do better than people expect us to do.
Well done to Shane Keegan, and that it's really remarkable stuff. And I think that attitude should be kind of reflected across the league. We'd be certainly doing a lot better, as you say. From a government point of view, Mick, I don't know if the government can help the league more, apart from the obvious issue of funding and stuff like that. Do you think more can be done on a national level to help our league's domestic game?
Yes, of course I do. And I've been arguing this in the Dáil Chamber. I mean, I actually find the government's attitude to sport is very disappointing. And just to give you an example, right, last year the sport would have got somewhere in the region of 40 million in terms of grants, right?
Yeah.
I mean, okay, there is some indirect money as well, but I mean, if you think that the abuse of alcohol in Ireland last year, in 2012, right, abuse of alcohol, sorry, 2013, alcohol abuse cost the Irish state 3.3 billion. Abuse of tobacco cost the state 1.1 billion. And obesity cost the state 1.3 billion and rising fast. Now, sport challenges all these things, right? Now, if, for example, I mean, we're looking at, there's alcohol, tobacco, and obesity are costing the state in the region of 6 billion, right?
Yeah.
Now, if you could make even less than a 20% saving on that, you'd be saving over 1 billion euros per year. So how in God's name would it not make more sense for the state to be spending a lot more money in promoting sport in order to get more people involved in it, keeping people longer involved in it, instead of them dropping off at 19, 20, 21? And I mean, it's an area that's just wide open for a positive investment on the part of the state.
Yeah, I think a lot of people will agree with you there, Mick, and keeping people involved in it is obviously a key point, because we see the amount of drop-offs when people feel that, okay, well, I can't actually make something out of this for myself and that. Just before I let you go, you mentioned Kevin Doyle, Wexford native. Of course, he's coming back from injury now, and he could yet play a key role for QPR in their push. I'm sure you'd be very happy to see him back in the Irish team as well.
Oh yeah, Kevin has been a wonderful professional, and Kevin is in great condition. I was talking to him a few times last week, and his recovery is coming on well, and he's confident that he'll be involved in the playoff with Queenstown Rangers. But Kevin is 30 years of age now, but I tell you, he's a young 30, and he has minded himself well. He's always had a real professional approach to minding his body and his head, and he's a perfect athlete with a perfect attitude, and people mightn't realise it, but as long as Kevin has the appetite, there's a good few years left in him, and don't be one bit surprised if he makes it back into the Premier Division and makes it back into the Irish team.
Yeah, a lot of people made the point about Kevin, Mick, that he was very loyal, and they commended his attitude towards, you know, his loyalty to the likes of Reading and Wolves when there was a lot of offers on the table to go to the top clubs. And a lot of people say he could have been a little bit more selfish, and he probably would have played at one of the top clubs had he thought about himself a little bit more. But again, that sheer loyalty, is it says a lot about his character, I think.
Yeah, well, it's only last January 12 months, I think it was last January 12 months anyway, that a deal had been done with Everton and Wolves, and everything was agreed, and Kevin was going to Everton. And at the last minute, just before Mick McCarthy got fired at Wolves, Mick pulled the plug on the deal, because he wanted to keep Kevin to try and help Wolves at that time. But shortly after that, Mick himself was gone. I thought a big mistake on Wolves' part to get rid of Mick McCarthy at that time. But it was a case of what might have been for Kevin, because, you know, it would have been nice to see him go to a club like Everton. I would have liked to see it, especially later on. But Kevin has been a bit unfortunate with injuries. He's had a couple of bad injuries over the last few years, and they haven't helped matters much. And I suppose for a lot of Premier clubs, given that Kevin is basically a striker, Kevin just wasn't scoring enough goals either. And talking about being unselfish, a big problem for him as well, does too much of his work too far from the goal.
Yeah.
And he's happy for others to score him. And but if you know, I think Kevin probably should have been a bit more selfish, should have been working a bit closer to the goal, and should have been thinking more of adding to his goal tally, as it does make a big difference.
Indeed. Well, we wish Kevin Doyle the very best of luck. And Mick, thanks a million for joining us. I wish you the very best of luck in the three teams that you manage, and for the Wexford Utes for the season ahead. It's going to be very interesting when we come back at the end of the season and see how it shapes up. Thanks a million for joining us on League of Ireland Goalmouth.
No problem. Thank you.
Great stuff there from Mick. Well, I'm afraid we're out of time here on the Why Big Football Show. My thanks to all our guests. Remember, if you'd like to contact me directly, it's dave@talkingsport.org. That's dave@talkingsport.org. I'll always reply, so don't be shy. We'll be back here on Freak FM at the same time next week. So for myself, Dave O'Grady, have a very good evening.